Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's very own personal finance podcast. This special episode is an investor education initiative by Kotak Mahindra Mutual Fund. Now, when we think of systematic investment plans or SIPs, we think of equity funds, right? But did you know that you can even do SIPs in debt funds? In fact, many smart investors and advisors always make it a point to incorporate debt fund-based SIPs in their portfolios. In fact, forget about common debt funds. You can even do SIPs in liquid funds. But how does an SIP work in debt funds? Does it work the same way in equity funds? To answer these questions and more, I'm joined today by Lakshmi Iyer, who is the President, CIO, Debt and Head Products at Kotak Mahindra Asset Management Company. Hi Lakshmi, welcome to our podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm all well, so far so good.
Cool, good to hear that and good to have you on our podcast. So Lakshmi, let's get on with our questions straight away. So SIPs is something that, you know, many people associate that with equity funds, but you've been managing debt funds all your career, Lakshmi. You know very well that, you know, SIPs are also there in debt funds. They can also be done in liquid funds. So really, I mean, is the concept at all popular with a section of investors, advisors? Do people even know that?
Sure. So SIP is nothing but, we all know, a systematic investment plan. It is nothing but a rupee cost averaging, where when the markets are on the lower trajectory, the same amount of money buys more units, and vice versa when the markets are on the upward trend. If you look at the concept of SIP, it is designed in a manner where the volatility can be made your friend. So that is the whole concept. Or for those investors who want to plan their cash flow, so, you know, salaried individuals or somebody who gets not lump sum cash flows, but more periodic cash flows, can plan their investments periodically, and therefore SIPs tend to be quite synonymous with equities. However, as you rightly observed, the same facility is very much available on the fixed income side, and depending on what his or her need is and the plan, the overall plan of asset allocation is, it is okay to do SIP as deemed fit into a fixed income strategy also, depending on what exactly is your investment risk appetite.
Okay, so Lakshmi, two things which you said over there, I noticed. You said that one is obviously it caters to people who have some kind of a regular cash flow. And before that, you also said that, you know, it's a tool available at the hands of investors to iron out market volatility. Now, I want to ask you specifically on the concept of ironing out market volatility, which is why, you know, fund managers and advisors typically advise people to invest in SIPs and equity funds so that you don't bother about market timing. So does that concept hold valid even in a debt fund? Because debt funds, you know, returns are very conservative, you know, and also SIPs is something that, you know, you invest every month. So after a year or year and a half of doing SIPs, you might find that, you know, your returns have gone nowhere in a debt fund. Anyways, the returns are very conservative. Plus, half of the money is deployed slowly, you know, it would have been just there with the fund for 6 months. So can you really explain us how, whether SIPs and debt funds really help ironing out the market volatility? Is it even needed? Or what is the main purpose of doing an SIP in a debt fund?
So if you break up the fixed income gamut into very short end, the mid end and the long end, you know, these are the broad spectrums. Because the law of volatility applies to this category, it is much more prudent that you do this investment in, I would say, slightly more long duration or long tenor products rather than doing it in very short tenor products. I think that is the crux of doing an SIP. For example, in a category like liquid, unless you have cash flow requirements or, you know, cash flow coming to you periodically, there may not be any material pro or con versus doing, you know, lump sum investment over an SIP. Whereas if you look at categories like a gilt category or a bond or a medium to long duration, those kind of categories, or even say a credit risk kind of a category. So these are some of the categories where an SIP kind of investment to suit as I said, investor palette in terms of riding out volatilities and not really trying to take calls on where the benchmark yields are likely to be. That could be a preferred protocol. But yes, for very short-term category fixed income, SIPs may not really be so effective.
So, interestingly, you said about gilt funds, you said about credit risk funds, where, you know, volatility is, can be there, right? And over there, you know, if you do an SIP, then it sort of helps you to iron out the volatility, right? I mean, that's what you're saying, that, you know, these categories can be volatile. I mean, in the long run, they can be rewarding, but in the short run, yes, they could be volatile. So if you want to work, the volatility in your favor, then SIP is the preferred route to invest in such funds.
On the interest rate volatility side, there are gilt funds and long duration funds, which are obviously more vulnerable to such volatile interest rate moves. On the credit risk side, or the credit category, the duration will not be very high. But obviously, there might be mark-to-market because these funds invest across the rating spectrum. So it's not always necessary that interest rate volatility will always be there in such categories because they are at the shorter end. So depending on which palette you want to pick up to suit your taste, accordingly, you can consider a few of these categories as a potent source of SIP investments.
Okay. Lakshmi, you earlier mentioned about liquid funds and SIPs. You know, I've heard some financial planners also recommend SIPs in liquid funds if you want to build some kind of an emergency cash. I mean, if you don't, emergency cash is the bedrock of any financial portfolio because, you know, at least one of the biggest lessons that we've all learned from COVID last year is that, you know, when you are faced with a job loss or an income loss, if you have an emergency cash worth of 6 months or 9 months of living expenses, then you can at least tide off that difficult phase in your life till you find an alternative employment. So to develop, and this is to be done before you make your entire portfolio, before you go into wealth creation, your emergency corpus, your insurance needs, very you know, basic foundation for your portfolio. Now, some financial planners also are of the opinion that, you know, a way to build an emergency cash kitty in your portfolio, if you already don't have one, is to channelize some of your monthly income through an SIP into a liquid fund. Do you agree with that, Lakshmi?
So my answer to that is, again, what is the end objective? If your end objective is to say that, you know, even a category like liquid, I want to befriend volatility, then probably that mechanism may not suit. But you are a set of investors who, you know, like the concept of a recurring deposit, which is a bank product, over, say, a fixed deposit or letting money just lie in savings account. If you are those variety of investors, then certainly, you know, building up your emergency kitty through a strategy like SIP in liquid is not a bad alternative. So it is, again, as I said, Kesav, it's not a one size fits all. It depends on what is your end objective. It is not always necessary that you are, you know, trying to weed out volatility in your investment process. It is also sometimes that you are trying to create better alternatives, some substitutes which also offer liquidity. It could be a mixed bag. So for those kind of investors, certainly it's not a bad choice.
Cool. You know, Lakshmi, one myth or one question that we always get asked by many of our readers, and I've seen this over the years, you know, that they always try and compare returns from an SIP, between an SIP and a lump sum. They say, which is better, an SIP is better, a lump sum is better from a returns perspective. Do you think that's a valid question, or do you think that returns, you cannot compare returns with these two modes? I mean, they serve a totally different purpose.
They serve a completely different purpose. You know, this comparison is like comparing an apple and custard apple just because both of them have the name apple in it. But the nutrition value and the intended use is very different for both these fruits. So likewise, SIP is recommended, as I mentioned, for investors who just don't want to bother about timing, who do not have that much of cash at disposal to have a lump sum investment, and who are aligning their investment goals via such investments. So, you know, and these investment goals happen over long term through the tenure of your service as an employer, employee, etc. Whereas lump sum, again, there's nothing right or wrong about the strategy. Lump sum is suited to those investors who are planning ab initio and are the fill it, shut it, forget it kind of investors who don't really care about intermittent volatility over next 10, 15, 20 years. And of course, as I said, they have that much of wealth at disposal to make an ab initio investment. So it's very, not right to compare the two sets of you know, if you are in a continuously upward trending market, it is reasonably okay to assume that your lump sum obviously is participating that much faster and longer in the market can tend to outperform. And in a downward market, because your limited amount buying more units, that compounding effect magnifies when the markets start picking up. So it's not a very right comparison to do, because the needs and wants of the investors undertaking each of these modes of investments are very, very varied.
The purpose is different. The purpose of doing an SIP is different. As you said, the purpose of doing a lump sum is different. So you can't really, as you rightly put it, you can't really compare the returns between the two. Cool. Lakshmi, another thing, you know, you earlier mentioned about credit risk funds, right? And you mentioned about gilt funds, and you mentioned the fact that, you know, how SIPs in debt funds really work to your advantage in longer duration funds rather than in the shorter duration funds. Now, Lakshmi, again, I mean, from your vast experience, and you've seen how credit risk funds have evolved, you know, what the industry went through. Of course, now, you know, we got the AMFI numbers a couple of days ago. And, you know, for the first time, we are seeing some amount of net inflow coming into credit risk funds. So many experts say that, you know, the worst is over for credit risk funds. I don't want to get too much into a projection trajectory over here about credit risk funds, but I want to ask you a basic question. Given whatever has happened with credit risk funds and given the risk levels that credit risk funds bring on the table, okay, I know that they have a role to play in many people's portfolios, so it's nothing right and wrong about that. But given the risk levels that credit risk funds bring, do you think that SIPs is a wise tool to invest in through in credit risk? Because you never know when there could be a shock 2 years, 3 years, 4 years down the when the economy turns bad, and that, you know, adds a lot of pressure on credit risk funds. And, you know, in also so that's one thing. The other thing is that when you invest in an SIP, of course your money is not locked, it's liquid, but in debt funds the long term and the short term capital gains threshold is 3 years. So typically in long duration funds, people tend to stay invested for 3 years, which means that there could be pressure on investors to stay invested for 3 years. Now, is it that it amounts to each installment in an SIP. So given that, do you think it's wise to continue an SIP in a fund like a credit risk fund? Or is it better to just put a lump sum and then see where you go from there?
In terms of volatility, Kesar, what your observation is absolutely correct. SIP might not really take care of too much of volatility, because the durations of, you know, in general, if you look at credit risk fund categories, not significantly high. Let's take some numbers. You know, if you look at the benchmark Nifty credit risk bond index returns over the last 10 years, it's been close to around 9.5% annualized. If you look at an SIP into the Nifty credit risk bond index, that SIP returns have also been close to around 9.4%. Likewise, if you look at a 5-year period, the returns both on the lump sum and an SIP mode has been approximately 9%. This is for the Nifty credit risk index. So what I'm trying to show you here is that because, despite all the upheavals that we have seen in the, I would say, industry, we have not seen too much of deviation in volatility in terms of the index returns, in terms of SIP or lump sum. And that's exactly what I was trying to highlight, that these are for more planned and regular cash flow stream of investors While you know we will not be discussing funds, but I'm sure the fund individual returns, if you you know remove, it might be a different research altogether. The answers would not be very different. So I think SIPs in such category funds are for those investors not really more to do volatility management on the interest rate side, but more to probably manage their cash flows and ensure that you're tying in. So you know you could have investors who are doing a monthly SIP in a diversified equity fund and probably would choose a combination of a gilt fund or a credit risk fund. So as I said, it has to be a mix and match approach. There clearly cannot be a one size fits all. But I still maintain that if we are talking about riding the interest rate volatility, then for those kind of investor mindsets, an SIP into long duration bond funds through gilt funds, etc., are certainly better suited.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense, Lakshmi. Let me just step back and ask you an even more basic question. Since we're talking about debt funds and we're talking about so many different types of debt funds, very simple question. Should all investors have some or the other allocation in debt funds? Are debt funds important that they have to be in everyone's portfolio, or can you just ignore debt funds altogether?
I think the degree of ownership can vary, but not owning, according to me, is not an option. And I'm not saying this because I'm managing a debt fund in the country today, but I am saying this because there has to be the right amount of stability and energy boosters in your portfolio. Energy boosters are typically your equity allocations, and stability maintainers are the fixed income allocations. Also, if you see, there is a natural magnetic pull towards banking products, and in some sense, they are all fixed income in nature. So therefore, you know, having a market-linked allocation to fixed income, to my mind, is inevitable. So it's not a question or should be. The question has to be how much should it be? And the answer to that is obviously a function of what goals you have, which you know, again, is not more the DIY, but it's more with you engage with your advisor and get the answers to that.
So the asset allocation is more, asset allocation should be there in everyone's portfolio, and that determines and how much risk you can take, what are your goals, what are your aspirations, what you want to get out of from your portfolio. All that will determine how much percentage of allocation should be there in debt funds. But as you elaborated, Lakshmi, debt is fixed income component is required in everyone's portfolio in different proportions.
I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. And I like the phrase that you used, energy and stability. I'm going to borrow that phrase and use it in one of my stories.
Perfect. If you want to make it even more spicy, you could say Red Bull and Nimbu Pani.
Yeah, that sounds very good. Okay. And Lakshmi, last question I wanted to ask you. Should you consider a systematic withdrawal plan or any such, you know, long-term kind of an income generating facilities from your fixed income funds for generating some kind of a regular income? For those kind of investors who want some kind of a regular income.
You can consider systematic withdrawal plan, but I would reckon that interest rates in the country are obviously, they do tend to move in ranges. So right now, if you see the benchmark yield in the country on the 10-year sovereign bond is close to about 6.15. But this is for a 10-year duration. If you are doing this for a 1 year or 2 year or 3 year duration, the yield ranges are in the band of 4 to 5%. Now, if this were to be the gross yields of the portfolio, how much can the investor, you know, earmark or tick mark towards a systematic withdrawal? That becomes a little bit of a challenge because broadly, fixed income, if you're talking about mid durations at the current juncture, most of the portfolio yields are just about in the range of 5 to 6%. So if the investor is having an aspiration of regular cash flows through mutual funds, then it's much better that he or she cherry picks dividend options. Also, if you look at, there are these hybrid, you know, the debt hybrid strategies, which actually blend equities and fixed income, though they are predominantly fixed income, they do have tail-ended allocations to equities so that they are able to, generate dividend income and distribute that on a periodic basis. Frequency could be monthly, quarterly, etc. I do understand that there is no assurance of any of these dividends, but these could be some of the better alternatives rather than trying to do an SWP or systematic withdrawal from pure fixed income strategies.
Okay. That makes sense. And Lakshmi, I'm tempted to ask you one question. Liquid funds, going back to liquid funds, you know, many people do invest in liquid funds as a stopgap arrangement through a facility called a systematic transfer plan. Now, this is, as you know, just to explain to our listeners, it's a facility where you want to invest a lump sum amount in a mutual fund, but you want to still stagger it. So, you know, instead of putting money in a fixed bank savings account and then, giving a transfer request, you put that lump sum money in a liquid fund or an overnight fund. And then you give an instruction to your fund house to transfer an equivalent sum of money every month over, let's say, the next 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 2 months or 3 months, and transfer everything gradually to your equity fund. That's what a systematic transfer plan is all about for our listeners. Now, liquid funds have, the returns have gone down because, the interest rates in the economy have gone down in the last 1 year or so. So the returns were very, very nominal. Do you still feel that investors should continue systematic transfer plans, or should they still opt for a systematic transfer plan today in a liquid fund or an overnight fund? I mean, should they even look at returns at all from liquid funds and overnight fund, or is it just a facility that they should be focusing on? What do you think should be their approach?
According to me, it is the latter, Kesar, because the systematic transfer plan is the facility. It's an enabler for progressively allocating money to equity as an asset class in this case. So therefore, the fund in which you have your lump sum should not be with the intent of generating return. It should be with the intent of keeping your capital reasonably okay with lesser volatility on the interest rate side, which is what overnight strategies or liquid strategies seek to offer. So the liquidity should be of paramount importance. Reducing volatility on that corpus should be of paramount importance, because ultimate game plan for you is to move that money into an asset class called equity, which is the intended wealth creator. So the wealth creation,
which is the final destination.
That's correct. So return maximization should certainly not be a driving factor for the source schemes of systematic transfer plan.
Okay, Lakshmi, thank you so much for your valuable insights, for your views on debt funds. You've taken time out to speak to us and elaborate debt funds. It's a subject that not many people understand, but you have explained it very lucidly and simplified the concept. So thank you so much, Lakshmi, for your valuable insights. Thanks all of our listeners also for joining in. Watch out for Invest Mentor series on moneycontrol.com and CNBC for more. We'll be back with another exciting episode of Simply Save. And in the meantime, do log on to moneycontrol.com for more.
Invest Mentor is presented by Kotak Mutual Fund. Mutual fund investments are subject to market risk. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.